is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Steve Miller, and here's what's coming up.
The report shows that state officials were heavily implicated by survivors of these journeys, particularly on the West Africa route. And in that, we saw examples of state officials requesting bribes, but also perhaps they're committing beatings, raping women and girls, and other abuses.
That's Charlie Yaxley, a spokesperson in Geneva for the UN Refugee Agency, on a new report on alleged abuses against refugees heading to Libya. And a planned anti-government protest in Zimbabwe fizzled today amid tight security. A UN report says officials engaged in abuses against refugees trying to reach Libya, and Botswana put its capital back into a two-week lockdown. Those stories and more are all next on Africa News Tonight. Opposition activists in Zimbabwe had planned mass protests today against rampant corruption, but businesses closed and streets were nearly empty, except for security forces after the government reimposed a COVID-19 lockdown, despite international calls not to use the pandemic as an excuse to crack down on dissent. Reporter Kudzaya Zinavashi has more from Harare.
Wary of past brutal and sometimes deadly crackdowns on public demonstrations, people decided to stay home rather than risk being outside where only essential services are allowed. Leopold Munende is a journalist who has been covering today's events for a local online publication.
The situation is a bit tense in Harare's CBD. There is heavy presence of police officers. As we got into town, we passed three checkpoints. There are very few people, mainly just guards and police officers themselves. There is no business at all.
The few people who were out on foot or in vehicles were often stopped to check if they had the proper papers to show that they were essential services. By mid-morning, a few arrests had been recorded, including renowned author Tsitsida Ngarembwa and Fadzai Mahere, the spokesperson of the main opposition party, MDC Alliance. Last night, police raided the home of Nduduzi Matutu, an editor of the online publication ZimLife, with a warrant to search for anything to link him to allegations of inciting public violence. Promise Mkwananzi is with a pressure group called Tajamuka that was among the organizers of the planned protests. He has been in hiding and is among the list of those wanted by police.
Already, as you can see, the country is in total shutdown. That's what we expect, to send a message to the authorities that we are not going to accept any longer the state of corruption in our country. So a lot is going to happen. We have said that these are fluid protests. They are going to take any form in order to disable the brutality and the repression of the regime in place.
In Harare's high-density residential areas, residents used a cat-and-mouse strategy with police and the military. Lamek Joe is a resident of Warren Park, some 10 kilometers from the central business district.
From the morning, things have been calm, and traffic along the road has been very low. Sacrifice came in the morning, and people ran. Things are standing right now. It's not like normal. It's a little bit low than any other normal day.
In most parts of the country, business also was at a standstill. In the build-up today, yesterday, police instructed businesses to shut down their operations. Humanitarian groups reported alleged assaults on citizens by the army or police. The situation unfolds in Zimbabwe after a series of recent human rights violations. A commission led by former South African President Kgalema Motlanthe to look into shootings by the army 2 years ago suggested that the army should stay in their barracks. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashi from Harare.
A United Nations agency says government officials, such as border guards, police, and soldiers, are responsible for nearly half of the physical violence suffered by thousands of African migrants traveling harsh land routes toward Libya. Mavis Okire has more from Ghana.
Each year, thousands of people trek across northern and central Africa, hoping to reach Libya, which has become the main launch pad for African migrants hoping to cross the Mediterranean to Europe. A new report from the United Nations High Commission for Refugees and the Mixed Migrant Center chronicles the harsh conditions and brutality the migrants experience. Charlie Yaxley, a spokesperson in Geneva for the UN Refugee Agency, says the report was based on 16,000 interviews with refugees and migrants who journeyed from West and East Africa towards the Mediterranean coast. He says the report shows that thousands of people are dying and suffering from extreme human rights abuses on these journeys at the hands of smugglers, traffickers, and also state officials. Most of the abuses happens in the shadows, in places where humanitarian organizations and security officials cannot reach.
The report shows that state officials were heavily implicated by survivors of these journeys, particularly on the West Africa route. And in that, we saw examples of state officials requesting bribes, but also perhaps they're committing beatings, raping women and girls, and other abuses.
Yaxley says national authorities should investigate allegations by refugees and migrants and make sure that there are protection programs for witnesses and victims to ensure that those found responsible are properly prosecuted. He says the COVID-19 pandemic has made people traveling these journeys more vulnerable, as some countries have closed their borders or restricted movements to contain the spread of the virus.
But what this has done has made the smugglers and traffickers' jobs more difficult, so they're charging higher prices and using more dangerous routes in order to bypass those additional restrictions. And at the same time, many refugees and migrants no longer have the jobs that they relied on for their income.
Yaxley says the report found out that between 2018 and 2019, about 1,750 people died taking these routes to the coast, making the land route one of the deadliest for migrants and refugees in the world. He says the report's hard data should lead to strong engagement from the international community to push states to address the abuses.
Well, some refugees report to us being burned with hot oil, having plastic melted onto them, being electrocuted by smugglers and traffickers in order to extract ransom payments. And unfortunately, these victims of these attacks find it very difficult to escape the trafficking networks once they're in them.
He says there is the need to help protect victims by providing them with legal aid and safe shelters so they would be able to come forward and report abuses. He called on intelligence agencies and police forces across the region and beyond to share information with each other so that a more comprehensive record of their activities can be built and abusive officials can be targeted and held accountable. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Ghana.
Botswana put its capital, Gaborone, back into a two-week lockdown today, closing schools and restricting movements after confirmed local COVID-19 transmissions doubled this week. Botswana has recorded 804 cases of the virus and two deaths, as Mkondosi Dube reports.
Botswana's Health Minister Dr. Lemogang Kwape said the return to lockdown was needed after the capital saw what he called a worrying rise in local cases of COVID-19.
I now regret to inform you that the situation has worsened in the last 24 hours. Botswana has recorded 30 new positive cases of COVID-19. With the majority of the cases emanating from schools in the greater Gaborone zone.
Authorities closed schools in Gaborone Friday and, except for essential workers, resumed requiring temporary permits for anyone to move around. Schools elsewhere in Botswana remain open. Confirmed local transmissions of the virus in Gaborone doubled in the past week from 70 to 140, most of them recorded in schools. Kwape said contact tracing had become more complex. He said some transport operators were failing to keep a passenger register as required by COVID-19 regulations.
During the course of this week, The disease has taken an unexpected turn. This now requires that we place the greater Gaborone zone under lockdown for a minimum period of 2 weeks to enable us to contain the disease.
This is the second time Botswana has returned to the capital to lockdown after lifting the restrictions since the pandemic began. Botswana has so far been relatively unscathed by the virus compared to other African countries with confirmed cases still in the hundreds. However, its neighbor South Africa is the worst hit on the continent, with confirmed COVID-19 cases approaching 500,000. The majority of Botswana's confirmed cases were along the border, most of them foreigners. Ngondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone, Botswana.
Ivory Coast has a new prime minister. Ahmed Bakayoko, who will also continue serving as defense minister, was officially named to the post after serving on an interim basis for 3 weeks after the sudden death of his predecessor. Nicolas Pinault reports from Paris.
Many observers in Abidjan see the choice as a continuity. Bakayoko is a close ally of President Alassane Ouattara and a pillar of the government. The 55-year-old Bakayoko has had the defense portfolio since 2017, after serving as interior minister from 2011. Bakayoko was appointed to serve as acting prime minister after Amadou Gon Coulibaly died from a heart attack on July 8th. Bakayoko's name had circulated as a potential presidential contender in the October election, before Gon Coulibaly was nominated in March as the ruling RHDP party's candidate. Ouattara earlier said he would not run for a third term, but after Gon Coulibaly's death, it has emerged that he could in fact stand for re-election. The president announced on Wednesday that the decision over his own candidacy would be postponed, sitting an extended mourning period after the death of his son, Gon Coulibaly. But he assured the political council of his RHDP movement in Abidjan, "I am with you. You know that I have never disappointed you." The October presidential election is said to be tense, 9 years after Ouattara ousted Laurent Gbagbo in 2011. Nicolas Pinault for VOA News, Paris.
Security forces in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo are searching for a drunken soldier who opened fire on the streets of the town of Sange last night, killing at least 12 people and seriously wounding 9 others. The army and a UN contingent were trying to calm the public, who launched angry protests and blocked a highway with branches and burning tires. The AFP news agency quoted witnesses as saying that the 12 bodies, wrapped in funeral shrouds, were used to block traffic at a busy crossroads. Officials say the dead included a 12-year-old girl. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Here's a recap of our top stories. A planned anti-government protest in Zimbabwe fizzled today amid tight security. A UN report says officials engaged in abuses against refugees trying to reach Libya, and Botswana put its capital back into a 2-week lockdown. Thanks for listening to VOA Africa. And for more news and information, visit our website at voanews.com. South African environmental activists are suing the government and mining companies to clean up toxic waste from gold mining and to compensate people who've become sick from the contamination. An environmental group says the waste, including uranium, has released radiation on nearby communities and squatters. Franco Puglisi has the details from Johannesburg.
A sandy hill is all that remains of Mintails' gold mining operation just outside Johannesburg. Mintails, an Australian-owned company, is being sued along with the government for not cleaning up environmental damage at its mines. The Federation for Sustainable Environment is taking the court action. The group director, Mariette Liffering, says waste at the mines, including uranium, has released radiation on nearby communities and squatters.
We do not hold the directors ourselves criminally responsible, but we do ask for the court to order the governments to take action against the directors. So we hope to achieve a precedent.
Mintails was liquidated last year, leaving an unfunded environmental liability. Meanwhile, the Department of Mineral and Energy Resources is seeking to avoid a lengthy legal process and wants to see the case settled out of court. The Department of Mineral and Energy Resources, Sande Mabaso, says a solution needs to be found.
We really would love to find a solution. for the community and would love the mine to come back and work so that it can resolve the environmental challenges and also resolve the issue of illegal mining in that area, which has now become nuisance to the communities and everyone in the surrounding areas.
Nearby communities such as Tudorshaft are exposed to radiation in toxic tailings, leftovers separated from the ore, says Liffrink.
This was declared a radioactive hotspot. The radioactivity levels in this area is significantly elevated. This community has been exposed for decades, more than a decade, to the dust fallout from the tailing storage facilities, the physical risks from open cast mining and blasting.
Some Tudorshaft residents have been relocated to safer areas, but many more have been left behind. The absence of basic structures is making the life unbearable for the Tudorshaft residents, says Lucas Mitsipizzo, an activist and resident of Tudorshaft community.
There is no infrastructure, no water, no electricity, and the community has been here since 1995, and we try to engage with different, you know, municipal departments as far as this concerned, and there was no luck, there was no answers in our proposals that we made in regard to relocation.
With the fate of the legal action filed by environmentalists unclear, the contamination surrounding one of the biggest gold fields in the world appears unlikely to be cleaned up anytime soon. Franco Puglisi for VOA News, Johannesburg.
With COVID-19 deaths now exceeding 7,000 in South Africa, deaths from other causes are also being reported to have risen by as much as 60%. Funeral parlors say their hands are full, and soon they will not be able to cope. The country's Cemeteries Association also warns that smaller towns are running out of burial space. Tusu Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
It's a pandemic that has destabilized all areas of life, and now it's set to disturb the dead too. COVID-19 is taking dozens of lives daily across South Africa, and mortuaries are not coping. Mlandeli Madlala is a manager at the Kings and Queens Funeral Parlor in Johannesburg.
The bodies that we are bringing in, that we are collecting from the hospitals, they are more than the bodies that we are taking out for burial. We'll be able to take maybe 4 bodies out and collect 10 bodies in.
Another undertaker, George Lolo from the Phoenix Mortuary, also in Johannesburg, says the delay in processing burial documents has meant that the facilities are overflowing.
The pressure we're taking, that the bodies come in and we can't keep them for 2 weeks or else they'll pile up. So we need them to be going out as quick as possible.
A number of cities are reportedly running out of burial space. However, Pepe Das, chairperson of the South African Cemeteries Association, says it's a problem the association has been raising for the past 20 years.
There's huge challenges because even if you look at, you know, the vast swathes of land that may seem available, they have to be suitable for actual burials. The sand, you have to be able to excavate it with hand tools.
But COVID-19 is not South Africa's only source of burial headache. A study by the South African Medical Research Council shows that the number of natural deaths has increased by up to 60% in the past few weeks. With the COVID-19 case surge expected to last until September, there are suggestions that traditional burial methods should be replaced by modern ones. These include cremation and burying more than one person in a single grave. Others are even suggesting mass graves, an idea facing fierce resistance in a country where the dead are still revered. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Bala Sidibe, a founding member of the seminal West African music group Orchestra Baobab, has died. That's according to the group's record label. In the 1970s, Orchestra Baobab was one of Senegal's most famous groups, Their songs, like this one called Dimu War, fused West African music with Latin, especially Cuban music. With musicians from Togo, Guinea, Morocco, Nigeria, and Senegal, the group represented Pan-Africanism. The group's administrator, Tierno Coyote, describes Sidibe as the pillar of the group. He told the Senegal press agency that Sidibe was two musicians in one because he sang and played the timpani drums. Coyote said the day before his death, Sidibe was rehearsing with the band in Dakar in preparation for Orchestra Baobab's 50th anniversary. The band's record label, World Circuit, said, quote, "Bala was a giant of African music and a great and gentle man," end quote. There are several ways to limit the spread of the coronavirus, such as washing hands and maintaining physical distance, but people living with dementia struggle to remember these precautions to fend off a disease that is particularly deadly to the elderly. Muhammad Yusuf reports from Kakamega, Western Kenya.
"81-year-old Azibeta Likaya constantly forgets where she has placed her mask, and each family member tries to locate it. The mother of 10 has dementia and degenerative and incurable conditions that affects 61,000 Kenyans, 2.5 million people in Africa, and 50 million people worldwide. Wycliffe Likaya says his mother needs reminders to do basic health precautions to stop the spread of the virus, like washing hands.
Huwa yeye ni mtu wa routine, lakini kuna wakati anaweza sahau kunawa mkono, na ni kwa sababu labda sio yeye.
She tries to follow the routine, but sometimes she forgets to wash her hands. It is not her fault, he says, but she is reminded when she forgets to follow the routine. We set the alarm on her phone, which reminds her what to do at a certain time. The World Health Organization defines dementia as a disorder in which there is deterioration in memory, thinking, behavior, and the ability to perform everyday activities. And while it affects older people, experts say dementia is not a normal part of aging. Alzheimer's disease is the most common form of dementia and may contribute up to 70% of cases, the WHO says. People with dementia, like Azibeta Likaya, are at greater risk of COVID-19, not only because they don't remember safety precautions, but also due to their age. COVID-19 is most likely to be deadly to those over age 60 years. Anne Shirande, a counsellor, visits the Likaya family once a week and provides therapy sessions in their rural home in Kakamega, Western Kenya.
"So it is very important that as a counsellor, as a community worker, we come to them, we visit, and of course we maintain the social distance the way we are doing it, and try to help them understand the changes with the season, because they need to understand that the season has changed. And there's so much that is happening that is beyond our control. We need to tell our patients that their immunity already is compromised. And if we allow corona in their homes, then it will not be a good situation for them."
Elizabeth Mutunga is the founder of Alzheimer's and Dementia Organizations in Kenya.
"Most of the people we work with, unfortunately, when they come to us, are usually in the middle stage and towards the late stage of dementia. So a lot of them, we can't do much with them. But with the caregivers, we give them tips on how to do this. And we are having fortnightly calls, Zoom calls with the caregivers to give them tips on how to care for their loved ones."
Dr. Jazar Hoka treats people suffering dementia. He said the health precautions and restrictions due to the virus help people get to know each other's health needs.
"We have issues and positive side on this, in the sense is that people, families are noticing the cognitive dysfunction in the elderly because they're spending more time with them indoors at home.
As population age, the World Health Organization projects 82 million worldwide will suffer dementia in 2030 and 152 million in 30 years' time. Mohamed Yusu for VOA News, Kakamega, Kenya.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, visit our website at voanews.com. Thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.